If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Bonnie Degas had just turned 18 and had a four-month-old son whom she adored. She worked as a live-in nanny so she could spend more time with her baby, Jeremy, and had big plans for her future. An inheritance that she received on her 18th birthday was going to help her build a life for her and her son. But, as Bonnie soon found, when people in your life discover that you have money, they start coming out of the woodwork to ask for it. Bonnie only had this money for about a month before she withdrew $15,000 in cash and vanished. In this small town where everyone knows everyone else, a pool of suspects emerged. But 30 years later, Bonnie and Jeremy's case remains unsolved. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Bonnie and Jeremy Degas. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about this going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Getting into this case, I feel like I start a lot of these episodes with like, this case is infuriating or some derivation of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is. And a lot of them are. And this one in particular is wild because a mother and her four-month-old baby vanished. And the story didn't really make it outside of the Tampa, Florida area.
Really?
Yeah, like it got no national attention whatsoever.
Hmm.
It was barely even a regional story, honestly.
Is like, this going to be another case where they're just assuming that she's starting her life over?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely did think that at first. You know, that was certainly one of the possibilities. But it kind of became pretty clear to them early on that likely was not the case. And like I said in the intro, I mean, we do have some suspects, but we're 30 years into it and it remains unsolved.
Well, now I've got questions.
Already?
Yeah. But I'll pause.
Okay.
I'll hold off.
Okay. It was weird when I was researching this case because even now, you know, there have been many articles written about it, but it all they all have the same basic information. Mm-hmm. And so usually when I'm researching these episodes, I don't listen to other true crime podcasts who have done the same case because, you know, and you're not really involved in the podcasting world, so you don't know this. There have been some plagiarism issues with some true crime podcasts, and like I don't even want to inadvertently get mixed up in any of that. So like I just try to stay away. But in this case, the podcast Unfound did a really long interview in 2018 with Bonnie's mother, and it is one of the very few places that I've seen really get into like deep details. And like it's a 2-hour episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So between this and a 2019 press conference that that she did, Linda, Bonnie's mother, did, that's actually where a lot of the basis of this episode comes from. So I just want to make that very clear up front. But as always, we do put our sources in our blog post about this episode. So like you can see that there. We'll have this podcast linked. So if you want to listen to the full like 2-hour interview with Bonnie's mom, I highly recommend that you do that. Okay. But before we get started, we have a few new members over on Patreon. We have the Felvey family, Lindsay M, and Chandra. So thank you all three of you so much for your support.
However many are
in the family.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. As a reminder, you can get these episodes early and ad-free by joining us over on Patreon at any level. You can also listen ad-free by subscribing to our premium edition on Apple Podcasts, starting at just $2.99 a month. And you get a discount if you pay them by the year. All the business out of the way, let's get started with the disappearance of Bonnie and Jeremy Degas. Bonnie Lee Degas was born on March 12, 1975 in Brandon, Florida, to Linda and Larry Degas. Linda was young when Bonnie was born, around 20, and she went on to have 4 more children after Bonnie, so Bonnie was the oldest of 5. The family lived in a modest 3-bedroom, 1-bath ranch-style home in Lithia, Florida. The house, however, was on 3 acres. So while the house was small.
Did you say 1 bath for 7 people?
Yes.
Wow.
I know. It was tough. But it was on 3 acres and they had horses.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So like didn't have a lot of space inside. Plenty of space outside. They did have horses and Bonnie just grew up adoring horses and riding. And she also was involved in the local equestrian scene growing up. So apparently a lot of people in this area have horses. It's a thing. Bonnie had a pretty typical small town life growing up. She got along well with her parents for the most part. Linda, her mom, said that she and her father, Larry, had some kind of issues growing up. But, you know, it sounds like it was all kind of pretty typical, you know, like maybe teenage headbutting type situations. Mm-hmm. But by the time that this is taking place, everybody was cool. Like, they were fine, it sounds like. And, you know, she got along relatively well with her siblings. But again, it's 5 siblings in a small house. I'm sure there were also a lot of fights and arguments and things like that. But it sounds like, you know, a happy family, good family, you know, good situation. According to her mother, Linda, Bonnie was really smart, too, but she didn't love school. It just wasn't, she wasn't a great student because it just didn't interest her. Really. But certain subjects did, and she would excel in English, for instance, and she particularly enjoyed poetry.
Hmm.
She was an imaginative girl who was outgoing and was one of those people who never met a stranger. Like, she would just talk to anyone. It sounds like Bonnie stayed out of trouble for the most part during her teenage years. Like, I'm sure there's, you know, normal teenage stuff, but Bonnie doesn't say that there was anything, you know, truly worrisome. Until Bonnie was 17 and became pregnant. She had apparently been seeing a boy down the street, but he and his family denied that he could be the father. According to them, he was medically incapable of fathering a child.
Okay.
Yeah, like Bonnie...
How...
I don't know. She didn't get into details.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But according to them, like, it was not physically possible for him to be the father. From what it sounds like, Bonnie definitely did believe that he was, but perhaps couldn't be 100% sure. For whatever reason, Bonnie and her family didn't really push the issue of paternity and
they just kind of moved on with their lives. So like a DNA test was never done, nothing like that.
Mm.
Bonnie's baby was due to be born about halfway through her senior year of high school, which would have made completing the school year difficult,
right?
As you can imagine. Yeah. But, you know, she didn't want to drop out or anything like that. So she was able to take GED classes. And a couple of weeks before her son was born, she was able to complete those, take the test, and then she received her GED, which for those of you not in the States, it's a general equivalency diploma. I think the G is for general. But in any case, it's an alternative high school diploma. So she is considered a high school graduate. She just didn't go about it in the traditional route.
I mean, good for her for following through.
Well, yeah, and getting it all like locked down before Jeremy was born.
Right.
And so on December 13th, 1992, Jeremy Degas was born. Now, despite her young age, Bonnie was thrilled to become a mother. Linda described Bonnie as attentive and said that she took really good care of Jeremy. As a new mother who was now out of high school, Bonnie was ready to assert her independence and start a new phase in her life. And I'm sure, you know, get out of that house because she needed space, like physical space. As it happened, there was a young couple who lived nearby who needed help. This family, the Creeches, had two sons. One was about a year and a half old, and the other was born just about a month after Jeremy. Soon after the second baby was born, the mother, Anna, broke her arm, so she was having trouble caring for the children. As I was saying that, I just made a connection with something that I found out later in the research process.
Okay.
That's really bumming me out right now, but that's going to come like at the end of our story. So yeah, that's weird. All right. Yeah, so the mom has a broken arm and a toddler and an infant definitely need some help. So it was decided that Bonnie and Jeremy would move in and Bonnie would help take care of the children while the husband, Mike Creech, was at work.
Makes sense.
Absolutely. The situation seemed like a win-win for everyone. So in the spring of 1993, Bonnie and Jeremy moved into a small room in the Creech residence, which was just a few miles from her childhood home. So she was still nearby, was still checking in and everything, but, you know, was moving on with her life.
Right. Had her own space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Around this time, on March 12th, 1993, Bonnie turned 18. This birthday was a big deal, not just because it meant that Bonnie was legally an adult, but because it also meant that she would receive an inheritance that had been kept in a trust. This inheritance was from Bonnie's great-grandmother. It consisted of nearly $50,000 and a small piece of land in Missouri.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. And I guess she had known about it because it was in this trust. Mm-hmm. And but it definitely came at a good time considering that she just had a baby.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, that's a lot of money now. And
Right. Imagine
if you're 18 in small town Florida in the early 90s. Like, that is a lot of money.
Right. And who's to say how much she could get for the other property if she decided to sell it or maybe move there.
Yeah. And I think moving there like was one of the things she was considering. And I do know that she had told Linda that she wanted to take a trip out there to just like see the piece of land, you know, and just, I guess, get an idea of where it was and things like that. So she was kind of planning around that, but hadn't made any final decisions. And, you know, this whole thing with the Creeches, like, it wasn't supposed to be a permanent thing. It was like they were both kind of helping each other out. It was just a temporary arrangement. You know, she wanted to buy a home of her own, whether in Florida or, you know, on this piece of land. And she wanted to create a life for her and her son. Despite the fact that she was only 18, it does seem that Bonnie had a pretty good head on her shoulders. She, like, didn't go out and spend a bunch of money and buy crazy things as soon as she got it. In fact, her first major purchase was incredibly practical and boring. She bought a minivan. And not even, like, a new one, like a used minivan.
Well, I was going to say, those can get pretty expensive.
Yeah, this was not. Yeah, she didn't go out and buy like a Mazda Miata or like something else a teenage girl in the early 90s probably would have wanted. She bought a 1986 Dodge Caravan that she spent $2,500 for.
Oh my God. I think my mom had a 1986 Dodge Caravan.
Bonnie's was silver. But as I alluded to in the intro, just because Bonnie wasn't interested in blowing her money doesn't mean that other people weren't. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredient as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not gonna just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit, 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Now, let's just get some clarity around the timeline here real quick. Jeremy was born in December 1992 when Bonnie was 17. She turned 18 on March 12, 1993, which is when she received this money. According to Linda's interview on Unfound, that's right around the time that Bonnie also started working for the Creech family. She believes that Bonnie only had that job for about a month before her disappearance. So she said it could have been as many as 2 months, but she really thinks it was only about a month. She bought the van shortly after receiving the money, so I guess she got that like mid to late March.
Okay.
But shortly after this, like very quickly after Bonnie received this money, relatives of the Creeches came to ask to borrow money to buy a truck. And this is very confusing because, you know, this is all coming from Linda, right? And she's like talking about this 20 plus years later. So she didn't really remember all of the details, but it was apparently supposed to be like some sort of business deal. So they showed Bonnie the title for the truck and was like, yes, see, it's a truck that we want to buy. Like, this is a real thing. But Bonnie, I don't know, it just seemed strange to her, I guess. So she went to her dad, Larry. It was like, hey, these people are asking for money. You know, they want to buy this truck, blah, blah, blah. He apparently like looked up the information that was on the title and found that the truck had actually been junked, like it was wrecked or totaled or whatever.
Yeah, I was a little confused as to why they would have a title
of
the truck.
Yeah, again, this, like I said, this is all kind of secondhand information coming 25 years later. So I don't know. But the point is that it seemed to be some sort of scam, you know, like, just not a legit thing. And so Bonnie luckily realized this with the help of her father and didn't give them any money.
That's good.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just interesting that it happened like so quickly and it was related, you know, people who are related to her employers, basically.
Yeah.
Linda only knows that this even happened because Bonnie went to Larry to ask for advice. So there could have been more instances of people in Bonnie's life who had like tried to hit her up for money that, you know, Linda just was not aware of. Because again, like her daughter's living outside of the house at this point. They're close, but Bonnie doesn't necessarily tell her every single thing that happens, right? Mm-hmm. And I would be inclined to believe that that's the case, because like if the sister of the family she's working for and her boyfriend felt comfortable enough to ask her for money, I imagine that people who are actually closer to her probably did as well.
Yeah, I'm sure members of her family.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Up. So this is where we are in the days and weeks leading up to her disappearance. Bonnie is navigating being a new mother with a new job and a new living situation while having come into a large sum of money. What Linda and the rest of Bonnie's family didn't know at the time was that she was also navigating a secret relationship. On April 28th, 1993, Bonnie went to her family's home and borrowed a couple of her siblings to help her clean her van. After they were done, she brought them back home, and Linda returned home from work at around 2 p.m. Linda then took Jeremy and Bonnie's van, because that's where the car seat was, and they went down to a nearby ball field to pick up one of Bonnie's sisters who was working there. And then, you know, Linda says that they stayed and like showed off the baby to everyone. And, you know, it's just like a normal little afternoon, right? So they all came back to the house after that. And then Bonnie and Jeremy left and returned to the Creeches. But that was the last time that Bonnie's family would ever see her. To them, it was a completely normal day. Like, Bonnie seemed like her usual self. Nothing seemed off at all. To the Degas family, though, the one thing that seemed slightly strange about that day didn't necessarily have anything to do with Bonnie. It happened before she came over. Earlier in the day, while Linda was still at work, a man named Terry Christie came by with his business partner. They owned a lawn care company in town. Now, Larry knew these men, mainly because it was a small town and everybody seems to know everybody there. The Degas family was actually close with Terry's brother, who was a neighbor and had kids around the same age as their kids. So basically, Christie and the Degas family were like family friends, but they weren't particularly close with Terry. They were close with his brother.
Yeah.
According to Linda, I mean, Terry had maybe stopped by like one other time ever, but it wasn't a thing.
Yeah, but either way, they knew.
Yeah, they knew who he was, but it was like, it was weird that he just popped by, you know? Uh-huh. And they apparently like just talked about the horses and just had like a general conversation about nothing, really. Like, they didn't even seem to have much of a purpose for coming over. They just like came and looked at horses and chit-chatted for a while and then left. At the time, it was kind of a little weird, but nothing strange or like overtly sinister. So, you know, had Bonnie not disappeared, it's probably something that they never would have thought of again.
Right.
But it's something to keep in mind given what happens later. So the next morning is April 29th. Anna Creech and her sister-in-law go over to the Degas house. Linda was at work again, but Larry was home. They asked Larry if he had seen Bonnie. He hadn't since yesterday afternoon. But Anna wasn't asking in a way that was like nervous or worried or whatever. You know, it was just casual. Like, oh, hey, have you seen Bonnie today? He's like, no, she came over yesterday. I haven't seen her today, though. And so they're like, okay, cool. Well, no biggie. We'll, you know, catch up with her later. And they left. You know, it seems as though Bonnie should have been working at that point.
Yeah,
in the day.
Right. That's what I was thinking, was like, yeah, they were coming over to say, hey, have you seen Bonnie? She's supposed to be up and like,
yeah, and maybe
helping
she
take care of these kids.
Did, but again, the way Linda's describing it, yeah, it just didn't throw up any red flags for Larry. So I don't know. Like, nobody seemed concerned, so he wasn't concerned either. A few hours later, however, they came back and told Larry that they hadn't told him the whole truth. That the reason they were looking for Bonnie is because she hadn't come home the night before, and they were actually worried.
Tell me again when the last time was, time of day, that they saw Bonnie.
So I'm not exactly sure when the last time the Creeches saw Bonnie was, but when the Dagus family saw Bonnie, it was the last time they saw her was probably like 3 p.m.-ish.
Okay.
Give or take, because Linda got home from work around 2,
mm-hmm.
and then they went to the ball field and did all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would guess around 3 p.m.
Okay.
On the 28th. So whether Bonnie went home and then left again, which I think is what it sounds like happened, nobody had seen her since the previous evening. Once Anna and her sister-in-law come back and, you know, tell Larry this, he obviously does start to get worried. So this is around the time again where Linda comes home from work. And so she gets home. Larry tells her what's going on. And they decided to call the sheriff's department and report Bonnie missing.
Do we know why the Creeches lied about it the first time? So or like it, omitted?
I think what it sounds like is they were just hoping that Bonnie like spent the night at her family's house. And so, like, they didn't want to make it a big deal if it wasn't, kind of thing. And, you know, I kind of mentioned the secret relationship. I think they were also trying to give her privacy.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think they were still trying to see if they could just, like, find her before they alerted anyone and made people panic. So, of course, when they called the sheriff's department, they had a hard time getting anyone to come out and take a report. After all, Bonnie was 18 and it had been less than 24 hours since she was last seen. The Daguses did manage to convince them, however, so a deputy was sent out. And it just so happened that, again, small town, they had like met this deputy before and he knew who Bonnie was. Like they weren't friends or anything, but like he was aware of who she was.
Uh-huh.
So he stayed there, took his statements, wrote stuff down, and then went over to the Creeches to talk to them. But apparently, he didn't actually file a missing persons report.
So he just took down information and didn't do anything with it? Or
that's what it sounds like, yeah. Like the next day, he went on vacation for 4 days, and nobody could get in touch with him. Because, you know, it's 93, so like nobody had cell phones. So if he's on vacation, he's on vacation. So nobody could reach him for 4 days. And it definitely created an issue in the early investigation,
yeah,
as you can imagine. And so anyway, so the Dagus has only found out that he didn't write a report and that he was on vacation because the next day they called the sheriff's department again to follow up and like see what was going on. And they had no idea what they were talking about.
So he didn't even like file an incident report or anything?
Sound like it. I mean, from what Linda says, she's like, they called the sheriff's department. They were just like, who's missing? Like what?
What the hell?
Yeah. So now it's like closer to 48 hours after Bonnie was last seen.
Right.
And they're starting from scratch.
Mm.
And despite all of this, they still had to like really work to convince the sheriff's department to send anybody out. Now, eventually, I think because Jeremy was with her is the only reason that they did.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And two detectives were sent out to talk to the family. But, you know, when the detectives arrived, they weren't treating it as like a foul play situation. They were treating it as a runaway. And
well, it's not even a runaway because she's 18.
Well, exactly, right? That they're like, she can leave. Like, her van's gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like, she left. Like,
big whoop.
Leave her alone, you know? Mm. So that's kind of how they're treating it. But they're like, you know, well, let's appease the parents or whatever. And so during this process, as they're talking to the investigators and as the investigators are now talking to the Creeches again, Linda and Larry start to find out about some of the secrets that their daughter had been keeping. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The TrueAge test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, like, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, Linda and Larry didn't find this out at the time, but on the first night that Bonnie and Jeremy were reported missing, when that original deputy went to go talk to the Creeches, they told him that on the night of the 28th, Bonnie was going to meet her boyfriend in the cash and carry parking lot.
All right.
And cash and carry is a grocery store chain.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that she was going to was in Brandon, Florida. They're in Lithia, Florida, but it's like 5-6 miles away.
Okay.
So that was the last thing that Bonnie had told them, but then she never came back. And so again, you know, back to your earlier question, I think that kind of is why Anna was maybe so like cagey with Larry at first, because she knew that this was a secret relationship. So she didn't want to be like, oh yeah, Bonnie was going out to meet her boyfriend and never came back.
Do we know why this is a secret relationship?
Not really. Like, it,
I mean, was he like older, or was it like?
It's definitely shady. We'll get into it. But it's the whole thing's weird. And so Linda and Larry are just like, what is happening? Like, who is this guy she's seeing? Why is she meeting him at a parking lot at 9 o'clock at night? Like, what is happening? You know, like, I'm sure this is all surprising and confusing, but Bonnie was an adult and she didn't have to tell her parents every detail of her love life. However, once they found out who the secret boyfriend was, they were absolutely shocked. According to the Creeches, the man who Bonnie had been seeing was Terry Christie.
Oh.
The friend of the family who randomly came over to the Degas house on the afternoon of the 28th. And at the time, Terry was 39 years old, which is about how old Linda was.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. Okay. As the Creeches spoke more about this relationship to police and the Degases, they began to paint a disturbing picture. Terry Christie wasn't married or anything, but he did allegedly insist that Bonnie kept their relationship a secret. And this could be due to like their general age difference, because, you know, Bonnie had just turned 18 and this dude was over twice her age. But Linda also later found indications in Bonnie's journal that the relationship had started when Bonnie was 17.
Okay.
So when you are a 39-year-old dude dating an underage girl, you can understand why he would probably want some secrecy around that.
Yeah.
According to the Creeches, Bonnie would walk to Terry's house at night and then come back to their house early in the morning, like before everybody got up. She didn't do this every night or anything, like maybe once or twice a week. But it's assumed that she walked instead of driving so that no one would see her minivan in front of his house.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So why was Bonnie meeting Terry at the cash and carry that night?
Yes, yeah. Yes, that was my next question.
Exactly. And, you know,
he has his own home.
He has his own home, but again, doesn't like to see her van,
run
her van there. So maybe it was just like, let's meet in a public place where it's not weird if somebody sees both of our cars there.
I guess.
But the reason why they were meeting specifically is because Bonnie was going to loan him money. But we're not talking a few bucks. We're not talking even $2,500 for some made-up truck.
Yeah.
$15,000 is what he asked her for.
Okay.
And it's what she agreed to give him. Apparently, Terry wanted to open a restaurant and wanted Bonnie to invest in this restaurant.
And $15,000 is what he thought he needed?
Yeah, in cash, apparently.
Well, of course.
Yeah. And bank records show that on the afternoon of April 28th, likely after she left her parents' house, although I'm not exactly sure what time, Bonnie went to her bank and withdrew $15,075 in cash.
Why the $75?
So that was, I think she just withdrew, like wanted $75 for herself, like just to have.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was like some sort of weird bank fee or something.
No, I think she just, you know, got an extra 75 while she was there. So this obviously means that the police want to talk to Terry Christie.
I would hope so.
Who, you know, wouldn't have been on their radar otherwise, because they didn't even know that like Bonnie knew that guy.
Yeah.
So they went and paid him a visit, but he denied being in any sort of a relationship with Bonnie and said that he barely knew her. Basically was like, yeah, I mean, I'm a family friend. Like, I've met her, but I'm not in a relationship with her, and I definitely did not ask her for $15,000 to start a restaurant.
Okay.
And, you know, apparently this first interview, they just like knocked on his door. It was very cordial. They were like, hey, do you mind if we take a look around? Because they're also at this point thinking that like maybe he's like bullshitting them about the relationship, and like maybe like Bonnie and Jeremy are there and he's like hiding them away, not in like a nefarious kidnapping kind of way.
Right.
But just in a like secret lover kind of way.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they're like, hey, can we look around? And he agrees, and they found nothing.
Hmm.
At this point, investigators aren't really sure what they have on their hands. They're still thinking it's a possibility that Bonnie left of her own volition and that the $15,000 in cash was part of that. And they're also, again, thinking that maybe Terry's involved, but not in like a nefarious way, but, you know,
somehow
something's going on here. Right. Maybe he's still trying to keep the relationship a secret and he has plans to meet up with her later. Like, you know, something around along those lines. But as of now, there's no evidence of foul play.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie's family, on the other hand, 100% believed like immediately that something terrible had happened to Bonnie and Jeremy. And this fear would only grow when something huge was found in the cash and carry parking lot on April 30th. Police found Bonnie's van.
So she did make it there.
Well, maybe. They find Bonnie's van. It's locked. And inside was Jeremy's diaper bag and Bonnie's purse. Her wallet contained $75. Jeremy's car seat and the $15,000 were gone. All right. So remember the deputy, he didn't file the report and then went on vacation for 4 days?
Yeah. He's back now.
No, he's not. This is still day two. Yeah, this is just the next day because she went missing on the 28th. She was last seen on the 28th. They call this deputy the evening of the 29th. And then this is the 30th that they find her van.
Okay.
So he's still gone. But when he does get back a couple of days later and realizes, like, holy shit, this is like turned into a huge thing, he said that when he spoke to Bonnie's family and then spoke to the Creeches told him that Bonnie was going to the cash and carry to meet up with her boyfriend. I don't know if they told him who the boyfriend was. So he drove by the cash and carry just to see. And says he did not see her van there.
Oh, interesting.
And according to Linda, the van was parked in a fairly visible space near the road. So if it had been there on the 29th, it would have been hard for the deputy to miss it. And assuming this deputy is telling the truth about going by there on the 29th, like that means that Bonnie's van did not appear in the cash and carry parking lot until after she had been missing for over 24 hours. Police processed the vehicle and checked for fingerprints. They also vacuumed for fibers, but nothing of interest was found. And remember, the car had just been cleaned earlier the day that Bonnie disappeared.
Right. They didn't even find any evidence of the boyfriend being in the car?
No. And Linda actually thinks that that's why Bonnie cleaned it, because she said that somebody, I forget who, I think it was like one of Bonnie's friends, had been in the van and been like, oh, what's that smell? It smelled like men's cologne.
Mm.
So Linda thinks that Terry Christie had been in the van and, you know, it smelled like his cologne. And so she like cleaned it so right, that nobody right, else
but,
would.
But before she went missing.
Right, right. In 2020, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office did a podcast episode on Bonnie's case. In it, Detective Clay Hobelman, the lead investigator on the case at the time, described how the investigation changed once the van was found. And when I say at the time, I mean in 2020. He's a cold case detective. He said, quote, "It doesn't really kick up until her vehicle is found, obviously abandoned, locked up without her anywhere around it. That's not until the second day. During that second day, with that amount of information and with the continuing following the trail of where she might be from the first day, once they find that vehicle and realize she's no longer around the mode of transportation she did have to leave the day prior, Then it becomes more of a suspicious missing person and where we would start considering her endangered, end quote. So I know that was like a long kind of loopity-loopity way of talking. But basically, you know, once they find her abandoned vehicle and her purse and the diaper bags in it, they're like, oh, maybe she didn't just drive away and take off.
Yeah. So that was a really long way of saying that finding the van triggered, like, it's a missing person case.
Yeah, exactly.
A very long way of saying that.
Right. So now investigators kick the investigation into gear and start interviewing more of Bonnie's friends and associates. But no one had much more information. Terry Christie obviously became a lot more interesting to investigators, but he stopped talking.
I'm not going to blame him for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also,
don't talk to the police ever.
Ever. And I think he did get a lawyer, which, again, also a good move, regardless of your guilt.
Regardless of how it looks.
Yeah. They asked him to take a polygraph, but he refused.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, he hasn't spoken to police beyond that first interview.
And there's no evidence to compel him to speak either.
Exactly. And I don't know if police were ever able to access Terry's bank records to see if he had deposited any money. But the fact that he specifically asked for it in cash makes me doubt that he would have deposited it anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, this may come as a shock. He never did open a restaurant.
Weird. Did he buy a truck?
I don't think so. Detective Hobelman, who's the cold case detective, says that the main problem with this case is the lack of technology at the time of Bonnie and Jeremy's disappearance. The cash and carry didn't have surveillance cameras in the parking lot, and Bonnie didn't have a cell phone that could be traced, nor did Terry Christie, which is exactly what they would do if this happened today, right?
Right.
Like, they would try to track her movements. They'd track his movements, see if they matched up. You know, they'd look for video surveillance in the parking lot, but they just didn't have those options. They were able to get CCTV footage of Bonnie making the bank withdrawal, but nothing of investigative importance was found on that. Like, she was alone. It's not like Terry was with her at the bank or, you know, anything like that. And unfortunately, as we see time and time again with cases that have little physical evidence, if people don't talk, it's easy for them to go cold. Yeah.
Yeah.
April 28th, 2023 was the 30th anniversary of Bonnie and Jeremy's disappearance. In that 30 years, Bonnie's family has accepted that their daughter is no longer alive. They believe that Jeremy was also murdered, but do allow for the possibility that whomever took them allowed Jeremy to live and be raised by someone else. Over the years, a few men have come forward claiming to be Jeremy, but DNA testing ruled them out.
Well, so it is interesting that his car seat was missing from the van.
Right.
And nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. His diaper bag was left there and her purse was. So, like, to me, what that shows is, because I'm guessing it's one of those baby carrier car seats,
yeah,
where you just like take the whole thing out.
Right.
And so if I'm Bonnie and I'm meeting somebody and they say, hey, come into my car, I'm taking out the carrier, I'm going into the car and like leaving the rest of my stuff in my car because I think I'm only going to be here for a minute, you know, giving you the money, talking, doing whatever.
Yeah.
But again, we don't know that this happened at the cash and carry parking lot.
Right.
You know, we just know that
that's where her vehicle ended up.
Yeah. And that's where the creatures said she had told them she was going. But,
right,
you know, we have no verification of any of that. And to that point, Terry Christie is the obvious suspect in this case, but he's not the only one. As Unfound host Ed Denzel points out in this episode, a lot of the information that Bonnie and the investigators have in this case came from the Creeches, and they're not necessarily reliable narrators. Remember, it was their family who tried to scam Bonnie right after she received her inheritance, and Mike Creech hadn't exactly been on the straight and narrow either before or since. And this is what I'm about to talk about is like this realization that I had at the beginning of this episode. About a year prior to all of this, in May 1992, Mike Creech was arrested for misdemeanor battery. He was arrested on the same charge just after Bonnie's disappearance in July 1993. The 1992 charge was domestic violence. It's noted on the arrest record, but it's unclear if the 1993 charge was as well. The realization that I kind of came to is the broken arm.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and I don't know, because I was thinking that that first arrest was a lot closer to this than it was. But on the YouTube video that Ed put up of this episode of Unfound, the first comment is from somebody claiming to be one of the Creech's sons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, it's so weird. You know, I was a baby. I don't remember Bonnie, but it's like crazy that, you know, my family was involved in this. And he's like, right before all this happened, my mom slipped in the shower and broke her arm. And then Bonnie came to live with us to help out.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah. He also says that, I don't know if it was him or, because I also saw a Reddit post from, I don't know if it's the same person or different, maybe the other son, saying that they don't have a relationship with their father anymore. So anyway, that's what's going on there. In 1998, Mike Creech was found guilty of grand theft third degree and dealing in stolen property. In 2003, he was convicted of petite theft. In 2007, he was found guilty once again of grand theft of a motor vehicle. He served a year in prison for that charge. In 2007, he was found guilty of a third offense. So it was like, you know, a three strikes kind of situation.
Yeah.
As well as possession of a controlled substance. He ended up serving an additional 2 years on those charges. He was released in 2012 and seems to have stayed out of trouble since then.
But nothing screams, jumps out like he did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like him stealing cars and potentially abusing his wife, yes, does not mean that he did anything to Bonnie and Jeremy. But I do think it's relevant to bring up just because, again, so much of the quote unquote facts that we have in this case
are from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think you just really have to take everything, you know, with a huge grain of salt. But let's talk about Terry Christie. After Bonnie and Jeremy's disappearance, Linda said that she found out a lot more about this guy. Again, we're talking small town, right? So now everybody finds out about this secret relationship. And when they do, women from around the area with whom Terry had also had relationships came forward to Linda and shared that he used them in a similar way that it seems as though he was using Bonnie. And now Linda said that, like, basically, he had been promising Bonnie that, you know, they were going to get married. And it just sounds like Bonnie was in love with this dude. She thought they were going to start a life together. And this is just what he did to women. And, you know, a lot of women said that they had very similar situations with him.
And gave him money.
Right. Yeah. One shocking bit of information that came from that episode of Unfound is that it seems as though Terry may have been pressuring Bonnie into some form of sex work.
Oh.
Yeah, because this is something that Ed brings up to Linda. And so the thing about Ed, the host of Unfound, is that he had talked to other people prior to this interview. Like he had talked to Larry, but like didn't, you know, Larry didn't come on the show. So he's, but he referenced conversations that he had had with Larry and I think some other people. And so I think based on these outside conversations that he had asked Linda if she thinks that Bonnie was in, you know, in sex work at all. And she kind of like dances around that a little bit, but says that since all this happened, and I think Linda's getting a lot of her information from like journals and things that Bonnie had left. Linda said that she had been reading up on Romeo pimps and that that sounds like what Terry had been doing to Bonnie. For those of you who have never heard of this term.
I have never heard of this term.
Yeah. A Romeo pimp or lover boy, as it's sometimes called, is a common tactic used in sex trafficking. According to a site dedicated to this from the government of the Netherlands, quote, lover boys or Romeo pimps are human traffickers who usually operate by trying to make young girls or boys fall in love with them. Sometimes they manipulate young people in other ways. Once they have victims under their influence, they exploit them, for instance, in the sex industry, end quote. Now, if you've heard about internet asshole Andrew Tate's recent arrest in Romania for human trafficking, this is basically what he was accused of doing, except he was doing it via social media. So he would meet young girls and women on social media and then basically end up convincing them that he was in love with them and would get them to work in pornography and things like that.
Got it.
Given the limited information we have about Bonnie and Terry, this dynamic could certainly have been in play. I mean, again, he's a much older man. Other women have come forward and said that, like, he, you know, would promise all these things and then get money out of them. And so it definitely seems as though it's a possibility. It seems even more likely once you look into his criminal history. In 1990, Terry pleaded guilty to solicitation of prostitution. In 2000, he was arrested on two counts of solicitation of prostitution and one count of stalking. In 2006, he was arrested in Mississippi on a charge of false pretense. And I didn't know what that meant. So I looked it up, and according to Mississippi attorney Rufus Aldridge, quote, false pretense means obtaining a signature or thing of value by using a false document or other writing. The essential element of false pretense is using a document or other tangible writing to commit the fraud. If the value of the money or personal property obtained is large, the false pretense can be a felony, end quote.
So it's like forging checks or writing bad checks?
Yeah, I think something along, or like forging somebody's signature on loan documents would be another way, you know? Old Terry apparently skipped town on that one and was later arrested in Florida on a fugitive warrant. But he does seem to have stayed out of trouble since then. Again, none of that proves that he did anything to Bonnie and Jeremy, but you have solicitation of prostitution and fraud.
Uh-huh.
And you have a mother, a child, and $15,000 missing.
Right. And then, and you have other women coming forward saying that he basically did the same thing to them to extort money out of them.
Exactly. We don't have much information. We just know that Bonnie was spending time around people who, you know, did have criminal records and continue to have criminal records.
Yeah, who all wanted money out of her.
Right. And, you know, there's also, not that anybody has really brought him up as a suspect, but like you also have this guy down the street who Bonnie says is the father of her child.
Right.
His family says
denies it outright that he medically can't.
He medically can't. But then, as Linda says, he actually did go on to have a baby with a woman years later. So
weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. And maybe he wasn't the father. Ed does ask Linda if she thinks it's possible that Terry Christie was the father of Jeremy. She doesn't think so. But again, there's no DNA. We have no idea.
Right.
So we don't know if Jeremy's paternity, regardless of who it was, whether it's this kid, whether it's Terry, whether it's whoever, like, could have been a possible motive.
Mm.
So yeah, you have that. You have these. You have the Creeches, whose, you know, family are asking them for money. Like, it's just who's, you know, not telling the full story of what's happening, you know, right away. Like, it's all kind of coming out in drips and drabs.
Uh-huh.
It's tough. I mean, Linda says, she's like, everyone's a suspect to me.
Yeah. I mean, it also doesn't help that it doesn't seem like the police did a whole lot of investigating initially.
No, they didn't. And by the time they did, there just really wasn't much they could find out, I guess.
I mean, do we know, did they search the Creech's house? That was her last known address.
So. Yeah. I don't know if the police searched it. I mean, it sounds like Linda ended up getting all of Bonnie's things. So, you know, I don't know if it was like more of a family going over there and collecting her stuff. I don't, you know, I'm sure the police looked around. I don't think any warrants were ever served in this case at all.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And so that's the thing. We have no idea if Bonnie ever left the Creech's house that night of her own accord, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, they didn't alibi themselves in any way.
Yeah, I mean, they said, like, she told us she was going to the cash and carry. Her van was later found at the cash and carry, but, I mean, okay, did she?
Yeah, right.
Or is that something that they made up and then put the van there later to make it fit with their version of the story?
Right. Yeah.
I know that we give, you know, shit to some of the investigators in these cases sometimes, you know, who just basically seem to sit back and like wait for people to talk. But like,
there's not really
somebody does just have to talk.
I mean, especially at this point, there's nothing to go on. There is no evidence.
Yeah.
If they didn't find anything in the van, that's it. Perhaps back then, if they had done a more thorough search of the area, maybe they would have found something or done more investigative work at all. But at this point, there's nothing the cold case detectives can really do.
Yeah, except really just go back and interview every single person who knew Bonnie, really, and just hope that somebody wants to say something different, you know?
Right.
The past 30 years have been incredibly difficult for the Degas family. In Linda's eyes, like I said, everyone is a suspect, and a lot of them still live in the area. So, you know, she sees them.
That's got to be tough.
Yeah. Terry Christie apparently did move away. He lives in North Florida now, I guess. So she at least doesn't have to see him. But yeah, they're still around. Her big plea is for anyone who was around the Lithia, Florida area in 1993 and thinks they may know something, no matter how small, to come forward. Because people out there have information on Bonnie and Jeremy, whether they realize it or not. Someone coming forward really is the only way the Degas family will likely ever get answers in this case. At that 2019 press conference I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Linda and Bonnie's sister, Nancy Richardson, spoke about what their hopes are for this case.
If whoever did this, whether it's the boyfriend, somebody else, whatever, if they're watching the news tonight and you could send them a message, what would you say to that person?
Help me here, because I don't want to say what I would like to say.
We want to find out what happened to Bonnie. That's the ultimate goal. The rest of that, that's between him and God.
Yeah.
Our goal is to know what happened to our sister. And we don't know. We have a lot of little pieces of the puzzle, but unfortunately, there's not that missing piece and there's information, but there's more information out there that would finish it. And like you said, it might not be. There's so many what ifs that could possibly be the case. And that's it. We've accepted a long time ago something really bad probably happened to her. But we still don't know. And there's that little piece left that she might still be out there. And how do you quit until you know? Because she might still be out there.
And even if you know and it's still something terrible, you can concentrate on that. You don't have to envision every single scenario out there. You know, we want to know what happened to them. We would love to be able to bring them home, you know, to have a burial for them, to have some sort of recognition. It's like...
Bonnie and Jeremy Degas have been missing from Brandon, Florida since April 28, 1993. Bonnie is a white woman with blonde hair and blue eyes. She is 5'6" and between 145 and 150 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She was last seen wearing a blue t-shirt, pink denim shorts, and white leather flip-flops. Bonnie has a large surgical scar on her abdomen and a scar on the shin of her left leg. Her ears are pierced. Bonnie was 18 when she went missing. She would be 48 today. Jeremy was 4.5 months old when he went missing. He would be 30 today. Anyone with information on the disappearance of Bonnie and Jeremy Degas is asked to call the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office at 813-247-8200. You can also contact the family directly at 813-247-0546 or lcan250@yahoo.com. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.